Welcome to Absolutely Fabulous. My name is Gillian Fennell, also known as Station Mum 101. I love everything about agriculture, especially the people, and especially communicating about what makes Australian ag so special.
And I'm Katja Williams, a beef cattle and cropping farmer, and I love all things ag, and I'm also known as the ultimate farm wife. Together, we are Absolutely Fabulous, and we are talking all things agriculture beyond the headlines.
And we can't wait to give our opinion to you, and we hope you enjoy it.
So let's get into today's episode. Hi guys, and welcome to another episode of Absolutely Fabulous. This is episode 17, and we are talking about childcare and roads, the promises of the government when we are heading into the next election, which has not yet been announced. But before we talk about childcare and roads, let's get a quick chit chat. We'll head into the chit chat. And Gillian, do you want to start us off? What have you been up to this week?
Well, I've just come back from Brisbane doing my Australian Institute of Company Directors course update, which was a really good, invigorating 2 days with some really professional and cool people in Brisbane. We loaded the last of Dad's sheep this morning, so farewell to our Merino ewes. Just the potties are left. If you're looking to buy some sheep, they'll be at Dublin in a couple of days. By the time you listen to this podcast, they probably would have been sold, but I'll advertise Dad's sheep for him on the socials, so at least he gets a bit of interest. As you can tell, I'm not at home. I'm down at the farm today because we are taking my youngest daughter off to Adelaide tomorrow to get her tonsils out. So she's getting very nervous and anxious, and just quietly I am a little bit too, but I'm certain everything will go well. And what have you been up to, Katja? What's the weather like there in your place today?
As people might be able to see from the video podcast, if you're watching on YouTube, I am sitting in the office sweating. It has been over 40 degrees the last couple of days, and it's just getting near impossible to cool anything. So I'm sitting here with my little wet rag, just occasionally going dib dib as the sweat runs down. So it probably might be easier to listen to this episode rather than watch it. Everything's going well here. The kids are all good. The farm is good. Just doing a lot of maintenance and keeping on top of all the herds. Starting to restock, which is great because we've been under a fair few summer storms, which is perfect. Heading into what is normally our hottest part of the season, which is usually January, February. But we're looking good. So
you haven't had any fire dangers or anything?
It has actually been a very mild fire season here, which we've been very lucky. It is not normally like that. But this season has, we've had the winds, but we haven't had the dry that usually catches light with the lightning storms that come with the summer storms and things like that.
Excellent. Hope that continues, because I see in Victoria they're on fire again, poor buggers. So hopefully they can. There's been some bad ones in Western Australia as well. So hopefully everyone stays safe and that they can recover from whatever impacts they have.
Yeah, absolutely. Sending our best wishes to them. Gillian, let's jump into our first topic, which is childcare. So did you want to kick us off on that one? What are your thoughts?
Oh, childcare. This has been an ongoing issue for so long, honestly. And a lot of it comes down to the fact that people don't acknowledge that looking after kids is actually a really hard job. And there's always been an expectation that it's funny because women are expected to stay home and look after their children, but that effort's never been acknowledged or recognised. And, you know, as things get more expensive, and, you know, women start to realise that they can do other things as well, the need for childcare has increased. But the supply of childcare hasn't quite met pace with the demand. And then you're left in scenarios, especially in rural and regional Australia and remote Australia where I live, where childcare simply is not available. And so you lose out of that community that's already small and struggling to start with. You lose people like doctors, nurses, healthcare workers, even people who work at schools or down the shops. So you're losing those full-bodied, you know, full-time equivalent people out of the workforce, and then things don't get done. So to me, it just makes sense to make childcare easily accessible and affordable. but unfortunately a lot of people don't have the same view. But I see Labor is out there splish-splashing the cash around, making all sorts of wild, bold promises. But we'll just have to wait and see what both parties deliver, I guess, because nothing's happened yet. Given the fact that both parties have a pretty bad track record with actually doing stuff after they're elected, yeah, be very mindful of that when they start making all their bold claims. How do you go for childcare where you live? Because you're on the farm, but you are quite close to town comparably, really, aren't you?
Yeah, which is another part of actually what I had written down as part of the issue with childcare is you can offer traditional childcare in a building in town, which is very accessible travel-wise, but what about on farms and stations where, you know, they can't do the drive? It's not economical to do the drive. It's the timing is not worth it to, you know, spend more than an hour driving into town and more than an hour driving back twice a day. You might as well do distance education or homeschooling. And even I don't think in Australia as much as other countries such as the US and is homeschooling is valued. I think if you did schooling yourself, then you should be able to school your kids. Otherwise, what's the point in putting them into a system that you went through that you don't have the confidence to then teach your kids? So why do you want to put them into the same system? But I've gone off on a rant and I haven't answered your question. We are close to town. I do access childcare. The wait lists for our region are astronomical. So we were very lucky with my first that there was an opening. And we sort of knew people when we got him into childcare. But for my others, they were all on the wait list from 20 weeks gestation, and none of them got access to daycare until between 6 and 12 months. And that was even just 2 days a week, which would be used as my original town days and paperwork. Because even when you're still on farm, if you're in certain roles or the farm relies on you for certain roles, a lot of the mums I talk about, whether they're pregnant, postpartum, or they're trying to raise toddlers and kids, you know, they're still relied on for the books. They're still relied on for, you know, the HR, the domestics, the cooking, the cleaning, everything else. So even those couple of days of respite is well needed. And as you said, like, yeah, all the parties promised things. So back in November, the Labor Party promised that they would put $1 billion into building early childcare facilities, and they've allowed a fund for that, and that would be part of 160 projects. But they have not yet, as far as I know, announced where they're going and whether that's actually going to take in the feedback that was done by the Parenthood project. And I know there was another one running as well, another project about childcare, particularly for farming families, whether that will actually help those families on the farm, whether that would help our rural communities.
The cynic in me is waiting for the election to be called and for them to identify their key seats. And I'm tipping that that's where the announcement of the building of those new childcare centres will be, because that's politicians for you. And it's really interesting that you brought up, like, if you can't access conventional, like, place-based childcare. Currently, there's no subsidies or assistance available for governesses or for in-home, like for nannies and those sorts of things. There is a scheme called in-home care where you can access some rebates and those sorts of things. But again, places are very limited, which makes no sense to me because it's not a physical building and you have to find that staff member yourself. So why are you still limiting those places? And I think what a lot of people lose in this conversation is that, yes, our work often takes us outside the house into the farm, and that's a really dangerous place for kids to be. But we're still expected to do it. Like, you know, and look, you get a lot of mums asking, new mums asking, oh, how do you manage with your kids in the cattle yards? And hey, and we all have tips and tricks because we've all done it, but realistically, the kids shouldn't be in the cattle yards because it's no place for children to be when they're really small. when they're bigger and they're like sort of self-contained and they want to learn and they want to be a part of what's going on, that's fine. But I've seen women, you know, doing cattle work and sheep work and stuff with babies strapped to their chest. And as much as I appreciate how strong and how that is, I also really feel for them, because they shouldn't have to choose between going to work and helping in their business and making sure their child's in a safe place. But they have to make that choice every day, which is why every time an announcement is made about childcare, not a single party or politician or anyone gives a rat's ass about people who can't access conventional childcare. It's like we don't even exist. And I know the Parenthood is doing really good work, and we do get mentioned a couple of times in their report, but there's so few of us, realistically. Like, in the whole scheme of things, there's so few families who would need to access that service. And it's such an easy fix, but because there's no votes in it and there's no popularity in it, everyone's just like, forget about those people. And, you know, sort of wears down after. So it wears you down after a bit. You get a bit sick of all their shit.
Yeah, absolutely. We go through a lot of the tips and tricks for that in the over 80 episodes that I have on the Ultimate Farm Wife. We cover anything from putting swing sets in the yards, not only to occupy the kids, but get them up off the ground away from the snakes. We talk about taking chalk down. So if your work yards, your cattle yards or your sheep yards have actually rusted, you know, you can actually draw on them with chalk. Keeps them occupied. Putting in different panels, putting in shade trees, or taking gazebo down for you to make sure that they're getting sun safe. Anything from putting, car seats inside a side-by-side. I've shared that on my socials before, so that they're actually strapped in, they're safe, they're in the shade. They're pretty well kept cool while you're driving along, and then you've got to find another solution, whether it's a battery-operated fan, to be able to cool them while, you know, you're not moving along. We've taken bouncers into the cattle yards and mounted them up on tables, inside panels, so that, you know, Bub's sitting there bouncing away and watching you work the crush or whatever it is that you're doing, but nothing can actually get to them. And they can't fall off and they can't roll out and all of that. So, and then when they're a bit bigger and a bit more mobile, sometimes you've got to, you know, I've worked with one strapped to my chest and one strapped to my back before, because we didn't have access to that. And I know that I'm not the only person who has had to do that. And we'll continue to do so.
So while Karch is having a nice drink of ice water, I think now's a really good time to announce, I think we should run a GoFundMe for cooling devices. Karch, because she's got four kids and is sitting in, you record in your laundry, don't you? Is that your office / recording studio?
Yeah.
And cooling or heating in there. And me, because I'm perimenopausal and I get the hot flushes, so... Donate now to so if a fan or air conditioning company would like to sponsor us. So childcare, what can happen to fix it? So this is the most frustrating part, because it doesn't require much effort to fix. Like, the solutions are all there. They've been told, ICPA, Isolated Children's and Parents Association, have been bringing solutions to the government for years, and for whatever reason, they're just never implemented. And I guess we don't like to think of ourselves as a minority group, and in a lot of senses we aren't, because, you know, we're white, we speak English, you know, we're not disabled generally. So we don't meet the conventional criteria for a minority group, but there's not a lot of us. And there are still some cases of severe disadvantage between remote living and, you know, even rural and urban living. And it's because there's not enough of us. And when it comes to lobbying and advocating and making election promises and stuff, we're a really unpopular group of people to make commitments to, because we are perceived as having this large amount of privilege. And I'm not saying we don't have privilege, because in a lot of cases we do. But just because we're good at some things and we don't need help with some things, there are a lot of things we do need assistance with. And it comes down to the basics: health, childcare, education. It's those things that we don't have access to, but, you know, through sheer willpower and through sheer bloody mindedness, we make sure that our kids get the best opportunities possible while still being able to go to work. And I think it's because we are so good at doing that we often get ignored and left behind, because people look at us and go, oh, but they're doing it, but they don't see the effort that goes into it. And if there's one thing that I could probably change, or at least, advertise a bit more broadly, it'd be that, like, yeah, we can do it, but damn, it's hard work. And it shouldn't be, because we live in Australia, everyone should have access to the basics at an affordable, reasonable price. Mm. Like, we don't mind paying either. Like, we don't mind paying for the service as long as it's a reasonable price. Like, and I don't begrudge people getting free childcare if they need it. It's all of these things. I don't begrudge free education or free health. Everyone in Australia should have access to that because we're a wealthy nation. So why are some people missing out? Why are we not looking after our most valuable people, which is our children? Because this is not about me as an adult. This is about the opportunities and the care of my children. Why are kids allowed to put up with this, be, subjected to this sort of stuff? All kids. It should be all kids. I don't care where they live, what colour they are, what they do, what their parents do for a living. All kids should have equal opportunity. And that's really starting to wind me up quite a lot.
I think it's also, even when they do implement a scheme or a trial, it never seems to run long enough. They used to use a lot of the community halls in country towns, CWA buildings, to be able to offer childcare once or twice a week. Or they used to have the education van, which would drive around and run, book libraries or little specialty programs. None of those lasted. They've all been pulled. And I also wonder, Donald Trump, whether you love him or hate him, I know we have mixed company within the podcast listeners for this one, which I love hearing. I get lots of DMs about different things with very strong opinions, and I greatly appreciate them. I love reading them. I have a good laugh sometimes. Please feel free. You can share those on our socials as well. But he has announced that it doesn't matter what level of schooling you have in the US, even if you are homeschooling, you will receive a rebate and you will receive funding for your child's education. And I'm wondering whether, because America has made that announcement, whether Australia might do the same thing as well.
Well, we do love to copy them, so I wouldn't be surprised if that's the path the LNP takes. Because Labor and their alliance with the unions are very much aligned to this, sort of institutional type childcare. Everyone must get the qualifications. Everyone must be X, Y, Z, because then that props up TAFEs and those sorts of things by getting more people trained. And training people to give them skills is never a bad thing. Then all those people become members of a union, and that's Labor's power base. So I would not be surprised at all if the LNP takes the Trump approach, I guess, because they do love to mimic a lot of his policies and say, all right, well, it's just an across the board, rebate or through a family assistance allowance or household allowance or whatever that bloody payment's called that requires me to do mountains of paperwork to access very few dollars. Because there are, like, this is what the most frustrating thing is. The mechanisms to do all this already exist. It's really not that hard. And in the whole scheme of things, it's not that expensive for the nation to ensure that kids can access and their families can access care and education. And you're right, a lot of those schemes that they do, they fail because they've done the same thing to Medicare. It's like, oh, well, the market will take care of it. But what they don't realise in a rural, regional and remote setting, there is no market. The market is so small it would require the participants to pay $10,000 a day to attend these sort of things because everything's so expensive because of the regulations and everything. And that's why you can't use your country hall anymore, because it doesn't have all the certain safety wigamajigs and all that sort of stuff. And, yep, kids need to be safe, 100%. But has that sort of become an industry in its own self of like, oh, well, you can't use the country hall anymore. Instead of giving the country hall a grant for 100 grand to make sure they've got little kids' toilets and all that sort of stuff, it's like, oh, well, we'll give the local council $3 million to build a new facility that meets all these standards. So it becomes a more like, oh, it creates more jobs, but it's not sustainable because we can't sustain that infrastructure because we don't have the population base. So let's be smarter about how we implement these programs. Because at the end of the day, it is going to cost more money if you start sort of investing and doing this to drive growth and to drive jobs, because the population base doesn't exist in these areas and it probably never will. And if it does start to look that way, then you can go back and reinvest in a community. But, you know, it's, and this again comes back to what we keep banging on about. These decisions are made by people who have no experience of the area or the region or the communities and don't have to live with the consequences of their decision. They just tick their box and say, oh yeah, we've done that. We've fixed that problem because we, you know, threw this many million dollars at the problem and look, now here's this shiny new thing, but in 5 years it's closed because it's not sustainable, because they don't listen to the people who live there and need the service.
Absolutely. I would love to hear from the AgFab community about what homeschooling options, not homeschooling, what education options you're doing for your children and what issues are arising with that. What would you like to see as the problem solving for the new government, whoever is going to be re-elected, or what you'd like to see the different parties actually promise and go through with?
Yeah. And throw out some things about who would you like to see as the Minister of Education? And this is something I've been thinking about for a long time because, you know, when they set up the portfolios, there's all these different, like we've got ministers for all sorts of shenanigans. But we always seem to ignore regional and remote and rural Australia. And so we don't have a ministry that looks at our issues. And should we have a minister, like a minister for the interior? If you're across the Blue Ranges, across the Blue Mountains, if you're on the other side, if you're on the western side of the Blue Mountains, like, should you have your own federal minister? Would that solve some of our problems, or is that just a further duplication of people who will not do their job properly?
Who knows? So, Gillian, that takes us to the mid of our episode. And this part of the episode is sponsored by Farm Table. So thank you, Farm Table. Farm Table now hosts our podcast page, our landing page. So I will add that in the show notes below for you all to check out. But welcome to Farm Table. Farm Table is a proud independent Australian agricultural knowledge platform, bringing together the most relevant and curated agricultural resources from around the globe. More than that, Farmtable supports industry collaboration, peer-to-peer networking, and functions to build the capacity of individuals and organisations across the entire Australian ag supply chain. With over 3,000 resources, the latest agricultural events, funding opportunities, grants, microcourses, and workshops all in one location, Farmtable makes it easier to find the information you need.
It does, and I could possibly be a bit biased here because I do work for Farmtable. One of my many hats that I wear, I am their social media specialist. But at Farmtable, we do two things, and one is the website that Katja was just talking about, where if you're looking for a resource on any sort of thing to do with agriculture, we maintain a massive library of resources that may not be easily found on the web anymore. A large library of things that may have been removed from like departmental websites or those sorts of things, but still contain relevant information. One of my favourite parts of the Farmtable website is the Ag Calendar, where we have got many, many ag events from across Australia. We will tell you if it's online, if it's a social event or a training event. Everything's easily findable, clickable, take you to the right place every time. We spend hours every day scouring the web to find events to put in there. So that's probably one of my favourite parts. We've got an in-house graphic designer. You've got me to do your social media for you. Rob, who you know basically runs everything, he's a techno guru whiz who loves to make websites and all that sort of nonsense. You know, and we do it quite cheaply because we value rural Australia and we value the agricultural community. And we know you're busy and we are not going to tell you something like, we like to say we are fluent in farmer. We're not going to bullshit to you. We won't promise things. We will make sure that what we deliver meets your needs and expectations. But
yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much, Farmtable, for having our landing page and sponsoring this part of the episode. So, Gillian, do we have an AgFab of the week?
Look, this is going to be incredibly biased of me, but I think our AgFab of the week has to be Jasmine, who is my son's girlfriend. She's trying to encourage him to listen to my podcast, despite him saying, I don't want to listen to my mother talk. And she has listened to every single episode and is, you know, really engaged with it. And I'm bringing her along with me to the conference, Karcher, which is so frightened. When this podcast's out, it's the last day for early bird tickets, isn't it? So I better hook in and buy her a ticket while I get the good pricing. But, yeah, it is, yeah, we'll give Jasmine the Ag Fab of the week. So I know you're going to listen to this, Jasmine, so thank you for being very supportive and thank you for putting up with my son's nonsense.
I absolutely love that. Yes, absolutely true. This is the last week of early bird, so by the time that this episode is released, it will be the last day to purchase early bird tickets. So we might even release the episode earlier in the day rather than at our later evening time slot. Just to see if we can get that out a bit earlier. Might even do it on a Thursday. What do you think, Gillian?
Thursday will be fine. We can do that. I'm sure, because it's up to you, because all I do is just go tappity-tap and put a bit of shit on the internet. So you do all the hard work. So if you want to get it out by Thursday, that's fine with me.
So early bird tickets finish on the 31st of January at 11:55 p.m. But there will still be tickets available for the standard price. But if you want to have that $200 savings, get your tickets before Friday at 11:55. And with that, we'll probably jump into our second topic, which is roads.
So up where I live, we don't have a council where I live. So the state government's responsible for maintaining our access road, which sometimes I wish they wouldn't touch because they're not very good at it. And also they contracted out to very high price contractors who do a very, very bad job. And because we're so isolated, no one checks on their work. Oh, hello, darling. We got more children. And, you know, we've only got 75 Ks of dirt. So I didn't realise in my ignorance of not driving around regional roads very frequently, because I go straight onto the Stuart Highway, which is federal money. A couple of weeks ago, I spent a little while driving around the Adelaide Hills in the mid-north of South Australia, and oh, my God, that is appalling. And from what I can understand, that's a pretty common feeling across most of rural and regional Australia, that the road network and that sort of thing is very underfunded. In many cases, it's quite dangerous. And we get every election, we get lots of promises about we're going to invest this and invest that, and they seem to award the contracts to big contract companies and the money just seems to disappear and the roads don't get any better. So, and again, it keeps coming back to this one thing. No one is using local knowledge. Like, it's just so frustrating, is that the locals know what needs to be fixed. They know how it needs to be done. Yet for some reason, their expertise in this matter is ignored completely.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially, you know, when you're taking unsealed roads into consideration and knowing the rainfall pattern and knowing the runoff and where it's going to flood and how high some of those waters can go. Like if you're driving through somewhere that, you know, seems flat, but when that country floods, You know, you need that local knowledge of, you know, those causeways are not going to last if it's put in a certain spot, or they need, you know, some people look at the infrastructure that's put in there and go, oh, gee, that's overkill. But they probably need it in that spot. And that's where the local knowledge is very helpful. For a country who operates predominantly off road transport and trucks, if the trucks stop, the country stops, basically. We've learnt that time and time again when other different political stances have been made and policies been brought in and it's affected the trucking industry, everything stops. We definitely need the money to go where the mouth is and actually get that rolled out on country roads. And because that's where, you know, we're based, that's where the agriculture is based. You've got to get the food, you've got to get the sheep, you've got to get the livestock from where it's being bred and raised to the plants, to the packaging industries, and out to its consumers. And without transport, whether that's trains or trucks, it stops. So even with vehicles, like, It's hard enough sometimes to drive on in the car, let alone adding a truck with weight and everything else on it as well.
And it just boggles the mind that this is not a new problem. And a country as big as Australia, it's like we put in a couple of train lines and a few bitumen roads on the East Coast, and the government went, done. Transport network sorted. Which is great if you just want to drive to the beach. But when you're talking about shifting stuff around, like natural resources, agricultural products, people, all these sorts of things, like you need a good solid transport network. The Stuart Highway is the only direct link from north to south. It gets cut at least once a year, if not more. And that's been happening since it was put in. So there's a massive disconnect here. It's like, oh, okay, well, all those people up in, everyone north of Adelaide, they don't need food, they'll be fine. Everyone north of Alice Springs, Darwin, Tennant Creek, Katherine, they'll be right. They don't need to get a truck from Woolies or Coles to get their groceries in. They'll be fine. But they're not fine. And then you go further out from there into the Indigenous communities, and they're not fine either because they don't have the storage capacity of a city. And population in these areas, although it's still not huge, has grown. So demand for these products is constantly increasing. And then people complain about, oh, well, why are my fruit and vegetables so expensive? Well, urban sprawl is pushing farms further and further away from regional, from your centres. So transport is going to cost more to get it back in. But there's still the same pissy little roads that you can't get a decent sized truck on. And again, such an easy fix. Yes, it's an expensive fix, especially the way the government likes to hand out contracts to their mates who do no work. But the fix is quite simple, realistically, and it is the government's job. It doesn't matter what level you're talking about. It is the government's job to provide infrastructure for the good of the nation. And, that's one of the rare things that I don't mind going into debt for. If you're going to build infrastructure that's going to help us be more profitable, be more sustainable for the next 100, 200 years, then by all means, that's a good investment. It's the same thing, like I don't mind going into debt to build new cattle yards because it's going to be safer, quicker, easier, more efficient, cost me less money in the long run to handle cattle through them. We need to invest in our national infrastructure, especially our transport infrastructure. This splashing a bit of cash around the edges and attempting to buy votes or electorates by promising people basketball stadiums or football stadiums or whatever, that's not a way to run a country. And I don't care what political stripe you are, because everyone does it. Every party goes, oh, we're going to build an art gallery, or we're going to build a something else, or we're going to build a footy stadium. For the people who actually live in that town, yeah, that's really nice. And they're like, oh, it'll drive growth and jobs. But what really drives growth and jobs is infrastructure. So, roads, hospitals, schools, all the important shit.
We
So
need
let's look
bring it out
on
here.
that.
We need it. Bring it out here.
And they're like, oh, we want more people to move to the regions. Okay, but why would they when there's no schools, no hospitals? Driving on the road takes your life into your own hands because it's a single lane of bitumen and you've got road trains coming both ways. And don't get me started on caravans. But, because yes, tourism does play an important part in the economy of many rural and regional communities. But I firmly believe there needs to be a license for towing a caravan. Because the modern day caravans are huge, they're
Massive.
heavy, and it takes a lot of skill. And people of a certain age retire, sink 100 grand into a caravan and gonna putt around the country, but they don't know how to drive it properly, and they don't know how to drive on outback roads or even
Well,
on regional roads.
I think it's even the mindset, Gillian. Like, they're not in the mindset, they're in holiday mode. They're in sightseeing mode, but you're on these roads that you need to share it with people who this is their livelihood, this is their job. They've got to make their timings, they've got to make their quotas, and they're big rigs. And you can't be putting along at 80k an hour in a 110 zone with several road trains, because there's not usually one coming, it's usually a whole convoy of them coming, and that is so dangerous for yourself, for them, and for whatever it is that they're carrying, whether that is livestock or whether that is refrigerated goods, whatever it is, that is a lot of weight and a lot of capacity coming your way. And a lot of them are not in the right mindset to be sharing a road with them. So either it needs to be wide enough with lots of lanes that the trucks can overtake safely, or it needs to be, I don't know whether you put them on different roads, like have your tourist lane and have your trucking lane, and so we can express the trucks through. Like, I don't know what the solution is there, but you can't have people with different mindset on the same single lane road.
Yeah, it is. It's such a challenge. And not all caravans, because some of them are lovely people. I'd say the majority of them are probably lovely people, but then you get some with this massive sense of entitlement that, oh, well, I'm bringing all this money to this small country town, so I will just take up 10 parks down the main street whilst I fetch my $10 worth of groceries and whinge about the price of everything. And it is a very frustrating thing. But, like, caravan, you're now driving a hinged heavy vehicle. Like, you're driving an MC combination, especially if you're, like, towing it with your brand new 300 series wagon or you know, Nissan Patrol or Dodge Ram or whatever it is that you spent the kids' inheritance on, which you're allowed to do by all means, but for the love of God, learn how to drive it properly before you set off, because you're bloody dangerous. And, you know, you have a responsibility to other road users. Everyone likes to whinge about trucks and how dangerous trucks are. Trucks, A, are out there doing a job. 90% of truckies are really safe, responsible drivers, because it is literally their job and it's their workplace and they do it all the time. And it's people who are just obeying along that make their lives really dangerous. We just want everyone to be as safe as possible on the roads. Mm. And also, outback caravanners, stop parking in truck parks. Yes. That's where truckies need to go to sleep. You've got a house. You're dragging your house around. Go and park somewhere else in your caravan park. Pay your $20 to the local community to stay at the caravan park. Don't be so tight. Leave the truck parks alone.
I also think, like, with those truck parks or the truck lanes, anything like that, like, they're there for a reason. And for anyone, I think the silliest thing I've seen is someone park in, when you're going down the ranges, park in one of those emergency ramps that they have in for the trucks. I'm like, you are going to die. If you choose to park in an emergency ramp or a lane specifically for a truck, you will die, because they're there for a reason and they're in that spot for a reason, because that is where statistics say their brakes are most likely to stop working, or where, you know, or where they're most likely going to have fatigue and need to pull over. And some of those truck bays are treed to try and stop the sound, to try and give them a bit of shade, try and give them a little bit of privacy. If you're parked in there in a silly spot, they may not even see you when they pull in, because you might be in a blind spot, because a lot of them spread across the country are not perfect when it comes to vision and things like that, because that's not the design of them and you're not supposed to be there. Yes, they might have toilets. Yes, they might have those sorts of things. Park in a safe spot and think, if a truck pulls in behind me, how much space do they need to get off the road? How much space do they need to be able to stop safely coming off at the speed that they might have to come off on some of those highways? Yep, the further remote you get, they're probably not going to have to come up at such big speed, but there's less traffic, so they're less likely to be looking for you to be pulled up in their spot.
Well, and that's right. If whatever you think space you need to give a truck, and this goes for any trucks, you might be a body truck through to a triple road train, they need more than you think, because they are heavier than you can possibly conceive. And there's nothing wrong with that. They have all the correct safety and braking mechanisms and everything in their vehicle. But if you've stopped in front of them and they literally have nowhere else to go, they will either ram up the ass of your little car or caravan and that'll be destroyed, or they will put themselves at risk and danger and other road users by trying to avoid you. So by being selfish and inconsiderate and just not being aware of your surroundings and what you're doing, you're putting other people's lives at risk. So maybe don't do that, because that's a dick move, okay? So, and this is not just caravanners. I'm talking about backpackers and people who sleep in those Lubongo vans and all sorts of people, because I do a lot of travelling on the roads and I see all sorts of people sleeping in places where they probably shouldn't, because I look at that and I get immediately anxious, because they're putting themselves and others in danger by being there. And that's, you know, don't do that. But if we invested properly in infrastructure, we would have proper places for everyone to pull over and be safe while they're doing their job, because let's not forget that those truckies are at work.
Yep.
They're not on holidays. They need to stop when they need to stop, because that's what their diary tells them they need to do. They need to stop and rest for a certain amount of time so they can be safe. We once took a truck across the Barkly Tablelands and we had to pull over and sleep because it was time for us to sleep. It was also quite late at night. And some lovely tourist type person was camping there with their mountain of dogs. And we couldn't rest or sleep because all those dogs did was fucking bark all night. And then they had the audacity to complain to us when we started up the truck and put the air brakes off, which we did on purpose because fuck them, quite frankly, because we couldn't rest. We had to get up and move on again. But, oh, my God, that's people are at work. They need to sleep when they need to sleep. So you take your tourist-type adventures and sleep in a tourist area. Leave work areas for people who are working, okay? If you can't find a spot to camp, that's not the truck driver's problem. Don't make it their problem, because they need those spaces. And, yeah, so let's invest in infrastructure. Let's leave truck places alone. Let's just be a bit more considerate on the road and learn how to drive with your bloody $200,000 caravan.
There are plenty of books and information pamphlets that you can pick up at any tourist information centre and speak to anyone at the tourist information centres, because a lot of them are volunteers and a lot of them know the area very well. So you can talk to them about where the free camping sites are, where the best place to camp is. They have the knowledge, and you should be planning, if you are doing a road trip like that, you should be planning where your possible next night will be, or where you're going to ask for that information. Because whether you are going caravan park to caravan park, or whether you're going roadside to roadside, which I have done, my family and I did a 3-month trip around Australia, and we predominantly went roadside to roadside unless we were staying at a caravan park to use the washing machine and to have a shower. There is lots of information, and there are lots of places when you are looking out on either side of the road. There is a reason that the fences are so far off the road. There are reasons that, you know, some properties will have up a little sign saying whether they do or don't welcome campers. People's properties are private property, whether they've got public roads going through them or not. So if you are driving along a road and you don't see a fence, you're probably on someone's property, and you probably need to get permission to stay there overnight. Most places will have a radio station, or most local communities will say, yep, you're camping on so-and-so's place tonight. Don't go so many chaos. Don't go off the road. Like, don't go so far off the road, because it's private property and you don't know what you're driving into. Again, roads aren't great. If you've got roads on private property, even if they are council or state roads, chances are they're not being looked after, because the government goes, well, they're on your property, you can look after it. So they might have an excavator. They might have a grader. But how often are they actually going to get on the grader to be able to fix the roads if they're trying to stock cattle, if they're trying to muster and there's been big rain? Like, they've got to get their livelihood and work done first before they worry about the roads on their property, both for them and for you. So it's going to be on the back burner for them, because they also probably don't get paid to maintain those roads, because not enough people go on them. And if you're one of those people who happens to be on them, you need to treat them with care, and you need to remember you're on someone's property. Don't leave your garbage there.
Yes. And don't light massive fires and then walk away and leave them.
Mm.
There's nothing worse than, because what you run the risk of setting fire to someone's whole livelihood and putting other people's lives at risk to come and fix up your stupid mistake, and you've driven away. You don't give a rat's. You know, it might not even be aware.
Yep.
So it would be my recommendation to not light a fire. If you're bush camping, if you're camping on the side of the road, you just have to go without a fire, because that's the safest way.
Yeah, absolutely. And just because you don't see them doesn't mean there's not livestock in that paddock. So don't do silly things like, what have I seen? I've seen people shoot clay targets, like, out of the back of their van. Like, don't do that. I mean, people will laugh, but I've seen it happen. Don't do that, because someone's probably got stock in that paddock. And if it's wild cattle in some of that wild country, that's, you know, they don't see people unless it's muster time. You're going to spook them. You're going to send them through infrastructure or through someone else's camp or out onto those roads where people or trucks are still driving. Like, just think, just because you can't see them, just because you can't hear them, doesn't mean they're not there.
And don't camp next to water points. Like, if you might think, oh, here's a really nice picturesque spot for me to camp on the bank of this dam or on the side of this creek or near this tank and trough set up. That will spook cattle from coming in if they're not used to people being there. And that's, you know, you don't want to stop things from having a drink. Don't do that. Camp at least a kilometre away. We personally prefer 3 kilometres because then they can't generally see, smell or hear you. But, yeah, don't do that.
As picturesque as it might be.
Yeah.
But I think we've gone off topic again because we love to follow our passion, and our passion is usually with livestock. But that's been a really good chat about the childcare, about roads, and a lot of extra contextual information for you all there. So have your say on our socials when we roll it out. Keep up the DMs because we love it, and we will see you all in another episode.
Bye.